Good morning. Thank you for coming today. My name is Brian Joyce, and I am a senator from the Norfolk, Bristol, Plymouth District. We're here today as a coalition of disability advocacy groups, state officials and legislators, and concerned citizens to urge the conference committee to immediately adopt an amendment that would ban aversive or shock therapy once and for all in Massachusetts. I'm going to introduce you to a special guest, Ken Mullins, an attorney from New York with a history of advocating on behalf of the disabled. Mr. Mullins is representing several former Rottenberg students, including one who was suing New York State for sending him to the Massachusetts school. Attorney Mullins has been instrumental in the New York Education Department investigation of the use of shock therapy on New York students in Massachusetts. He flew to Boston from New York this morning just for this, and I want to thank him for that and commend him for his hard work on this important issue. Aversive therapy, also known as shock therapy, is the deliberate distribution of a physiological state of shock in an individual for the purpose of psychiatric treatment. Today, this practice is being used on children enrolled at the Judge Rottenberg Center, a special needs school in my district in Canton, Massachusetts, which serves students with conduct, behavior, emotional, and psychiatric problems, and students with autism. JRC is the only school in the U.S. known to use electric shock punishment as a means of reducing violent and otherwise objectionable behavior. Two Massachusetts educational agencies are now investigating the conditions at this school. JRC was recently cited by the Mass Department of Professional Licensure after it was found that 14 of the 17 psychologists listed on the school's website were not licensed, prompting the Division of Licensure to launch an investigation as well. Since the school's founding in 1971, several states, including California and Rhode Island, have withdrawn their students and passed forms of legislation banning aversive therapy in their own states. An overwhelming number of human rights organizations have questioned the broad use of shock therapy, including the ACLU, DSS, DMR, the Association for Persons with Severe Handicaps, and the Association of Developmental Disability Providers. States around the country have prohibited their students from coming to Massachusetts JRC, yet our own children have no such protection and are still subjected to JRC's form of electric shock therapy. This is not only embarrassing, it is wrong. I believe that it is our obligation to stop the indiscriminate, harmful, and inappropriate use of shock therapy on this vulnerable group of disabled children and adults. Toward that end, I have introduced an amendment to the budget, which has now passed the Senate, that would ban aversive therapy in Massachusetts. I want to point out, wherever she might have gone, Representative Barbara Letalian, who has been a leader in this effort to ban this cruel and abusive treatment of vulnerable children in Massachusetts, in whose legislation I copied for that budget amendment. And it was Barbara who gave me the quote that was in the newspaper that I believe, "We would not allow this treatment on our prisoners, and we certainly should not allow it on our vulnerable children." So before I introduce Representative Letalian, let me introduce Attorney Ken Mullins.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you this morning. I have to say that the first time I spoke with Senator Joyce, my first question really to him was, what are you doing in Massachusetts? How can this happen? There's not a school anywhere else in the country that allows the type of therapy, so-called therapy, that's being administered to children, to so-called students at this particular center. I was first brought into this a number of months ago by a woman who came to me. A woman who came to me and said that her son was a student at JRC and he was being shocked repeatedly. And she told me that she was told that it was going to be a small, insignificant shock, and she was convinced there was really not a lot of pain involved in it, so she signed approval for it. She said when she came up to see what it was just totally unbelievable. She couldn't believe what they were doing to her son and to others. So we initiated an investigation and we wrote a letter to the New York State Department of Education, which basically went ignored. So we persisted. We contacted legislators, we contacted Senator Schumer's office, and then questions started being asked. What is happening in Massachusetts? Why are kids allowed to be tortured in Massachusetts? Now, JRC will tell you, there's no torture, this is therapy. But when you hear what's really happening behind the scenes, you realize that there is child abuse going on inside the walls in that building in Canton, Massachusetts. Students are not only being shocked for serious behavioral disorders, students are being stopped for saying no when requested to do something. I have a 17-year-old son. If I shocked him every time he said no to me, I would have a real problem. He would have a real problem. When a student says no, he is oftentimes consequated for disobeying. What does it mean to be consequated? Well, it's not just a simple shock most of the time. There are different levels of what's called the GED, the graduated electronic decelerator. They can make it a small voltage or they could raise the voltage, and nobody's checking, but we do know that the GED4 is the most serious form of shock, and it hurts unbelievably. The New York State Department of Education about a month ago went to the school on a surprise visit, and everything I'm saying to you today has been found to be true and documented in their report, which can be read online here in Massachusetts. And I suggest to you and to the voters of this state and to the legislators who are considering this that they read that and believe it, because at this point I am getting calls into my office at a rate of 10 to 15 a day from prior employees of the center, from current employees of the center, and from parents of students who were at the center saying that everything found in that report was true. For example, students are being taken out of a class for doing some type of behavior that's supposed to be consequated. They're taken to another room and they're put on a board tied with their arms above their head and their feet below their body. And as they lay there for time 7, 8, 10 hours at a time, every hour they get shocked with not a GED, but a GED4 most of the time, over and over and over again. And these children, these kids, writhe and scream in pain with other people watching. But this in Massachusetts right now is legal. It's not in almost any other state in the entire country, but in Massachusetts, it's legal to tie a kid down and shock him. And it shouldn't be. It just doesn't make sense. And after New York, after I filed two lawsuits, one against the state of New York and one against the district that sent the student based on New York's recommendation, after New York sent a team down a month ago to see what was happening, they finally said, we don't want this either. We're not going to allow our kids to be abused. And the report issued by New York State Department of Education says that the students at this school are at risk, serious risk, for their health and safety. That can't happen, and that shouldn't happen. And from a common sense approach, it doesn't make any sense. I'm told that Dr. Israel is spending huge sums of money to lobby the legislature. I'm told there are members of the House who have children who go to that center. None of that should matter, and it raises to me the question, is the money he's spending to lobby coming from New York taxpayer money, or possibly Massachusetts taxpayer money? That's a question that the people of Massachusetts should ask, and the people of New York will ask. There's no doubt that that's the next question that I'm going to raise. Just as other examples of the type of consequence that children are facing, let me just take a step back. The staff members there are untrained. People are given the button to administer electric shock, after 2 weeks of training. As a result of that, the shock device is not being put on properly. Students, when they have their belt across their stomach for shock, that belt, when it's put on improperly, turns, and the students get shocked into their spine, causing horrendous, unbelievable pain that goes unreported. A young man was shocked in his genitals as a result of the fact that this device was put on improperly. And everything I'm telling you has been told to me repeatedly by staff members at this facility, staff members who are currently there or were previously there. There are people being shocked because they squint on a regular basis. Facial expressions are a prerequisite to further activity. Shock them. There's a Down syndrome, blind child, nonverbal, severely retarded student who was consecrated for moaning while she was going to the bathroom. Note, that is her only way of verbally communicating, moaning, and she was shocked for it while she was going to the bathroom. A young student was shocked for nagging. Now, I've been blamed for nagging many times, but there's a young student who was shocked because he was in his seat and he had to go to the bathroom and he's nonverbal and he talks with sign language. He was signing that he had to go to the bathroom repeatedly and they shocked him for nagging. You don't have people there who have any discretion as to when to shock. So they're shocking kids for everything and for nothing. It doesn't make any sense. Realistically, the bottom line is, thank goodness, New York has made a determination that this has to be stopped. The New York legislature is going to pass a bill in the Senate banning payment for any type of aversive therapy, and the House question has not been decided yet, but that will be decided also within the next 2 weeks. The Department of Education has now put a stop to this going forward until there's further investigation. The only real suggestion I have, other than, is to speak to the people who are going to vote on this and tell them this shouldn't happen, is that if there's any doubt in your minds whatsoever as to whether kids or children should be abused in this manner, then stop it until it's decided. You're letting kids on a daily basis, as we speak, they're being tortured over there, and there's the indecision, there's doubt as to whether this should be happening. That doubt should lead to a conclusion that this shouldn't occur. I'll take questions if anybody has any. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to know why this was started years ago. This has been going on for children for decades, and it horrifies me that this was developed years ago. Why not children?
The only guess I can take is that money talks, and Dr. Israel has been spreading his money around in many places, which seem to stop this type of suit. The staff members there who are now talking out and who I'm hearing from extensively are still scared to come public because Dr. Israel is saying, you talk, we're going to sue you. If you say we violated children, then you should have reported them. But these people say, you told us it was legal. The courts were approving it. We didn't know that this was something that shouldn't have happened. Now they're starting to come forward. Right now, Dr. Israel is dancing in my backyard. I've sued him in New York. He doesn't have that kind of power in New York, so things are moving the way you would think they would, and they should in this state.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much to Ken Mullins for his work and for taking the time and the expense to come up here today. In further response to your question, I had two former employees in my office this morning, and one indicated that he had been afraid to come forward for two reasons. One, apparently a confidentiality agreement. Apparently the employee had signed a confidentiality agreement upon his beginning work at the JRC. And second, there is apparently a mandatory reporting requirement that may have been triggered when he witnessed some abuse. So essentially, what I was told by former employees is that they have been afraid to come forward. We are now working in my office on crafting a legislative solution whereby current and former employees can come forward and speak freely without any fear of legal retribution. Let me now introduce Representative Barbara Letalian. Representative Letalian is on the Children and Families Committee in the legislature and has been a leader in the effort to stop this cruel and abusive treatment, so-called aversive therapy.
Thank you. I have a very soft voice and I've got a cold, so if you can't hear me, let me know. Let me just start by saying I'm thrilled that we're here today. I'm so impressed that Senator Joyce was able to get this through on the budget side as an outside section in the Senate. This is a bill that's been going on for 30 years, and I'll quickly outline a timeline for people to give you a sense of how long we've been contending with this issue. My two predecessors in the House that have worked on this, Carol Donovan most recently, carried this for about 10 years, and when she retired, she handed it off to me. Prior to her, Sheriff James DePaola, who had been the chair of Human Services, ran this and spoke quite poignantly with me about his experience of going down unannounced to JRC and demanding that the GED device be placed on him. And he said, Barbara, you'll never imagine what that felt like to have that device placed on you. So he still is very much an ally on this issue. But this goes since 1971. In 1971, JRC was formed in Rhode Island as a summer day school for 6 mentally retarded and autistic children. In 1973, they moved to Providence and opened a 5-day program. In 1976, Rhode Island withdrew their day students from BRI, and they opened in California. In 1977, the state of California ordered Israel to close a branch of the center in Massachusetts after citing it for numerous violations, including depriving clients of food and leaving them in restraints. In 1979, a review team from New York State examined Israel's approach and found that its effect on students was the singular most depressing experience the team members have had in numerous visitations to human services programs, and that the program relies on a professional ideology to deny children the opportunities for fun and deny them any opportunity to demonstrate anything other than a few pre-selected responses. In 1980, BRI in California was closed after the state ordered them to stop using aversive treatment. In 1985, a student by the name of Vincent Miletich died at a group home operated by BRI while being restrained. In 1988, the Massachusetts House voted by a wide margin to outlaw aversive therapy. In 1990, Linda Cornelson, a student at BRI, died of a perforated ulcer. In the days before her death, the administration of aversives was increased more than 80 times. For 4 hours in an afternoon, staff pinched Linda 36 times, squeezed her muscles 14 times, spanked with a spatula 13 times, and put 11 foul-tasting substances in her mouth and made her smell ammonia. In 1994, Massachusetts auditor criticized BRI for refusing to allow his office to review the $1.2 million in legal and lobbying expenses, even though BRI received at the time $8 million in state funds. They also, according to the auditor, the school misclassified about half of the $1.2 million as dire care and program consultant costs rather than as legal expenses. So this is what we're up against. You know, a lot of money is being spent, as was alluded by Attorney Mullins, that a lot of money is being spent on lobbying and legal and public relations. In 1995, the Massachusetts DMR Commissioner ordered the schools to halt the use of electric shock therapy. He said that the school violated several conditions of its state certification and cited the example of a student being shocked more than 100 times. Back in 1998, a child at JRC died while jumping out the back of a school bus while being transported from his group home to the Canton School. At that point, he was the 6th student to die at the school. In 1998 as well, another child escaped from a group home in Rehoboth. Since he was a member of the school sex offender program, the local schools were forced to lock their doors and not dismiss students until he was found. By the year 2000, there were 60 complaints filed against the center, including allegations that the GED appliance had been misapplied. fast forward, and as you know, this bill's been filed for over 20 years. Most recently in March, this bill went to a study on my committee, the Committee on Children and Families, which distresses me to no end because I happen to be a parent of a child on the autism spectrum. I know that there are positive behavioral approaches that can be used, for example, applied behavioral analysis and others. This is the only center in the country, to our knowledge, that does this. Other centers welcome children on the autism spectrum, children with mental retardation, children with other profound lifelong disabilities, and they don't punish them for trying to communicate in the ways in which they're able to communicate. For some people, that is ticking. For some people, that is groaning. For some people, you know, it's a nonverbal thing. So it distressed me to no end for that to go to a study, but shortly thereafter, actually, the state of New York, on behalf of a student, decided to go forward and press a legal case. The state of New Jersey is also looking to potentially either pull their students or no longer allow their students to have aversive techniques done. Right now, where this stands is we are in conference committee. The Senate has placed it on their side of the budget, but in order for it to go forward and become the law of the land, the House has to come around and agree to do this. Now, when we had committee hearings, it was very interesting because we had family members who came in who would not take questions. They would only come in at the urging of the director to assert that this was better than where their child was before. We had a blind autistic child who was mentally retarded come in with her mother, and her mother basically said, you know, my daughter was knocked to the ground to be restrained in the previous school, so by comparison, I feel that this is a better alternative for my child. We also have been led to believe that this is an issue of parental choice, and that isn't this a great option for parents? And while I certainly sympathize with those parents who are in the terrible predicament of not being able to safely care for their own child, there are other schools, there are other remedies, there are other places, and we weren't given the opportunity to ask those family members whether they'd had an outside evaluation, whether they knew of other treatments. We have people that have been here for decades, folks. And when you are shocked over and over and over again, you withdraw, is what happens. And so, you know, the families, yes, the families are able to have that choice of the child being there. But I would say, where is the choice on behalf of an autistic or a mentally retarded or a nonverbal person to be able to stand up and say what's right for them? I actually have a colleague whose nephew attends the school. His brother and wife live in New York, and he was trying to get my colleagues on the committee to buy into this choice issue. It's not a choice for the person who we most need to stand up for, which are those vulnerable people who don't have a voice. You know, we've likened this to, we don't do this to prisoners, and why would we do it to our most vulnerable? This is a human rights issue that if we tried to do this down in Guantanamo Bay, we'd have the whole of, you know, the world looking at us and saying, we can't treat people this way. It's inhumane. And yet, for some strange reason, we're still allowing this to go on in Massachusetts. And again, as a parent and a, you know, 10-year activist in the field of autism spectrum disorder, I know there are other alternatives. I actually had a gentleman sit in my office whose daughter is now an accomplished painter on the South Shore who told me that 10 years ago the option for his daughter was that she could go off to JRC, and he didn't do it, and he pursued all sorts of other options, and she's now a very productive woman in her early 40s who is, as I said, an accomplished artist. There are other options. It's the easy way to go to just give up on these people and just say, by shocking them, we're going to manage their lives. There's no quality of life there when you're doing that. And so we're hoping that we can, you know, provide some outside pressure into the State House. Most of my colleagues have no idea this goes on. John Q. Public has no idea that, you know, that we are shocking mentally retarded, autistic, and kids with behavioral issues. And I have to tell you, most of the kids that came in to testify in my committee had the device on their back. So if they talk about pressure, what if they say the wrong thing? What if they say that this isn't a great school? They're going to get shocked. And in fact, when we asked them about it, they said they had been shocked during the course of their committee testimony. So, and a lot of the kids that came up and said, you know, we were basically behavioral issues. I was disrespecting my mother. I was part of a gang. Things like that. Things that really don't rise to the occasion of needing to shock a child. I'm sorry. And they, as I said, only brought in two examples of folks who really couldn't speak for themselves, but we know there are many more there. And the lawyers that testify said that when they went in to interview their clients, they were handed a GED to use. And they were told, here you go, hit this if they're misbehaving, if there's a problem. These were folks that were not trained to use this, and they were horrified that they would just be indiscriminately handed this shock device and said, here, you can just use this. And that's another concern. As Attorney Mullen said, people aren't being trained. We're not convinced this has been vetted through the FDA. There's a whole host of issues that are very, very troublesome. So it's our job to put sort of the pressure from the outside in, let people realize this is going on. And this is really a David and Goliath battle, because there's a lot of money behind this school. They're a tremendous PR machine. When CNN and People Magazine and others went to interview them, the stipulation was they would only be interviewed if they were allowed to be surrounded by a number of families who all feel tremendous pressure that they don't know where their child's going to go if they have to leave here. And it's a terrible predicament for those families to be in, and we need to help them, and I sympathize with them. But that's just, you know, the levels to which the PR machine will go out to say that this is the greatest thing in the world. And, you know, if you think about what we're doing to these folks, you know in your heart this is not a good thing at all. So thank you very much.
Very well done, Barbara. And we all do know in our hearts that this is simply wrong. That was shocking children. And we, and the two former employees that were in my office indicated that those shocks result in some instances in burning our children. Now, they also indicated that sometimes an employee would shock the wrong child, that sometimes a child would be shocked and not know why he or she was being shocked, but it seems to me in any instance, it's just simply wrong. Let me introduce now Leo Sarkissian, the Executive Director of the ARC of Massachusetts.
Thank you, Senator, and I just have a few words to say as part of the broad coalition, that's in favor of the language in the bill. I also want to say it's fitting we're here in Nurses Hall, because Nurses Hall is about nurses caring for people and giving treatment, and that's what is not happening when you use forms of punishment on people and pain. We know we can change how people behave if you give enough pain or cause enough pain. That's nothing remarkable. But that is not treatment. And this is only the third time that this language has passed a branch of government. And I'd love to give a round of applause to Senator Joyce for getting that into the, because it's only the third time in history that it's actually made it past the branch of government. This is the time we've got to pass it. The report from New York State is compelling, a lot of facts and details. Once again, JRC says it's biased, and that's what they've said every time. Together we can make a difference, and I want to just mention all the groups that are part of this. I'm just to read the list. Federation for Children with Special Needs, the Coalition for the Legal Rights of People with Disabilities, that has been on this issue for years, TASH, which used to be the Association for the Severely Handicapped Individuals, Center for Public Representation, the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation, Chris Cherko is here from the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation. We have the Massachusetts Office on Disability, and Myra Burloff is here, the director of that office. The Mental Health Legal Advisors, part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Susan Findell, are you? All right, great. She's here. The Association for Developmental Disability Providers, Grace Healy, their executive director is here. I want to make sure Bill Allen is here with the Disability Policy Consortium, which is in itself represents at least 12, 14 organizations, Bill, across disability world. And there are several other groups. I'm not going to mention them, but the ARC of the United States, other groups across the country, the ACLU is here represented. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Huh? Norma Shapiro is here. TASH New England and Advocates for Autism of Massachusetts also supports the bill, and Community Resources for People with Autism. We are, by the way, the ARC is a family-based organization. We fight for families, decision-making, and family choice in what we do. That's one of the biggest things we advocate for, funding and laws. But the one place we have to cross the line is sanctioning pain to children. We can't go with that. That's something, if a parent did in their home today, they would be picked up by child welfare agencies. There is a law prohibiting teachers to use this kind of activity. So it's really important to know what we're talking about is highly different than what others are allowed to do, and we need to put a stop to it today. I'd like to introduce my colleague who's here, again, another leader in this broad coalition, the Executive Director of the Disability Law Center, Stan Eichner.
Hello, everyone. My name is Stan Eichner. I'm Executive Director of the Disability Law Center. DLC is what's called the Protection and Advocacy Agency for Massachusetts. And what that means is that almost 30 years ago, Congress understood that there was a need to establish independent organizations in each state to address issues of abuse and neglect for individuals with disabilities. And pursuant to that mandate, DLC has been a prime sponsor, along with all these other organizations, of the anti-aversives legislation. The Disability Law Center, as a public interest law center, represents 8 clients at JRC. They range in age from 22 years to 45 years in age. They have been there 10 to 20 years, subjected to various forms of painful aversives during their time there. It's not surprising that they continue to be there, because the essential nature of these aversives is that they can't work. They're not treatment, they can't last over a period of time, so that they don't replace positive reinforcements for these students. As other people have mentioned, most of the painful aversives are GEDs, level 1 through level 4, 4 being the worst. One of our lawyers was there, and just so he would know what the experience was like, was shocked with the GED 1, not the 4, but 1. He said it was the most painful experience he's ever had. And one of his clients is on GED 4, which is at least 5 times more powerful, 5 times more electricity than the GED 1. And Representative D'Italian mentioned the incident where one of our lawyers was there. She was interviewing her client, and as the orderly went out of the room, they handed the shocker to my staff attorney. No training, no consultation, no anything. Just said, here, now you can shock them. It's just one example of how there is obviously an inadequate amount of supervision and training for those people who do the painful aversives to these individuals with disabilities. You know, here in Massachusetts, we are lucky. We have a constitutional amendment, 114, which prohibits discrimination against individuals with disabilities. Now, and the language which Representative L'Italian and Senator Joyce introduced references that constitutional amendment and notes the fact that because we don't do this to people without disabilities, it's a violation of equal protection, it's a violation of the Constitution to provide this kind of painful shock to folks with disabilities that we would never do, we would never be allowed to do to individuals who do not have disabilities. On behalf of the Law Center, as well as on behalf of the Coalition for Legal Rights of the Disabled, I want to commend the leadership of Senator Joyce and Representative D'Italian. This is a key piece of legislation. We urge all of you to let the General Court know how essential this is, how important it is. The time to stop painful verses is now. We can no longer tolerate painful torture of our citizens with disabilities. And I urge everyone to support the important legislative leadership shown by the senator and the representative. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, first of all, we don't actually host too many press conferences in my office, so if we ever do one again, it won't be in this room. But the enthusiasm that you're hearing from some advocates on another issue is the enthusiasm that we need to hear from you, and more importantly, the conference committee members need to hear from you. This amendment banning aversive therapy is through the Senate. It's not through the House. There are six legislators now meeting to work out the differences in this state budget for fiscal year 07. The conferees should hear from you. They have a whole host of important issues before them. They may not know very much about this cruel and abusive treatment of our innocent children that's going on in Massachusetts. Stan was kind enough to mention me, and Barbara, I will also mention Tom Santacandro, who is a state representative from Ashland and who is also an attorney who represents disabled children. And he and Representative Letalian have together formed the Disability Law Caucus here among legislators concerned about how we treat our disabled children. So let me introduce the representative.
Thank you, Senator. And I really want to thank Senator Joyce and Representative Barbara Letalian for bringing this forward. I am a lawyer, and as he said, I represent children typically on the special education side, but the side he didn't tell you was that I'm a dad. My son is now 22 years old and has Down syndrome, so I've continued to advocate for him through his whole life. Actually, this morning I was at his ISP meeting, so I understand a lot of the issues that are going on here, as well as I sit on the Committee for Children and Families, and when we were discussing this issue on the Committee for Children and Families, I said, I want to see how this feels. I want to understand what it is we're talking about. So I met with the people with Judge Rottenberg Center. They came out, they put the metal tab on my forearm. What they told me was that they use a setting from 1 to 3. They put mine on 1 setting, on the setting for 1, which is the lowest setting, and then they told me, don't grab it while it's shocking you, it'll be much worse. They shocked my arm, and it was probably the most painful experience I've ever had in the longest 2 seconds I've had. It's a 2-second shock that they administer that is just unbelievable. I can see how they can control behavior with that, because I would do anything they said when they threatened to shock me. But it's really important. I think the base part of this bill is just purely a civil rights issue. The language that exists in this bill presently is just language that says that it's going to be illegal to perform a punishment or something on someone with a disability, that you can't perform something like that on a person with a disability as opposed to someone without a disability, that we have to have, that it has to be equal on all people. And I think that for me, the issue is the issue of a person and the sanctity of a person and their own individual rights. I think that's something that's lost, and it's something that exists in this bill. It's to say that everybody is equal, and I think that's really where we need to be on this. I think that there's no room for this type of aversive punishment. It's been clear from the hearings that we had that there are behavioral programs that can affect, even that can have the good effect on people with the significant disabilities that Judge Rottenberg is talking about. So I think it's critical that we do talk to the members of the conference committee. It's critical for all the people in the Commonwealth and all the people in actually in this country, since people are coming all over the country to the Judge Rottenberg Center. to get rid of this aversive therapy, especially the electroshock therapy. Thank you very much for all your work.
So there is an opportunity to make a difference, to perhaps do the most important thing that Rep. Letalian, if I pronounce this Irish name correctly, Rep. Sanicandro and I could ever do as legislators and you could ever do as advocates, and that is to convince the conference committee members to approve this Senate amendment. All of the representatives will be here today. In fact, there's a photograph scheduled at 12:30. So all the state representatives are in the building today. And frankly, time is growing very short. There is a resistance to outside sections. I understand that resistance. But there's also the reality that this legislation has languished year after year after year after year, and legislators come and go, and this legislation does not go through. There is a very effective public relations, very effective lobbying effort that to date has stopped the effort to ban this cruel and abusive treatment in Massachusetts. Now we have a real opportunity. First, on the positive, we've seen great advances in positive reinforcement, in early intervention, in treatment of our disabled and vulnerable children, so that these desperate families no longer would feel compelled to turn to this really desperate measure. Second, we also have the state of New York in the lawsuit filed by Attorney Mullins and also the review by the state's Department of Education. If you look at the New York report, it indicates on page 14 that the New York regulators discovered what appeared to be violations of Massachusetts law in the Rottenberg Center, that even under the terms by which this crazy treatment is allowed, the center is apparently violating that those restrictions. And it's incredible, and it should be embarrassing to all of us as Massachusetts citizens, that New York regulators had to point out the shortcomings in the violations of Massachusetts law. In any event, we now have an opportunity to ban aversive therapy. If you can convince six conference committee members, three of whom have already supported this in the Senate, to include this provision in the final budget, this cruel and abusive treatment will go away once and for all in Massachusetts.